Welcome to Bits About Books, the home for conversations with authors of breakthrough books on sales, marketing, and business. Founders, entrepreneurs, and individual professionals, we all need to keep track of ideas that are helping create our today and tomorrow. Bits About Books will strive to find those books and speak to their authors, go behind the scenes and understand what inspired the authors to write the books that they did and how they went about doing so. Through our conversations, we hope to gain insights that will help us to get the most out of our efforts. I'm your host Shubhanjan Sarkar, founder of PitchLink, the next generation buyer-seller engagement platform, where our mission is to make buying easy. Thank you for your time and for joining us in this session. I have a favor to ask. While you continue to listen to the podcast, please leave a comment or rating at iTunes or wherever else you get your podcasts from. It means a lot to hear from you. Today, we have with us Carl Gold, the chief data scientist at Zuora Inc. and author of the book Fighting Churn with Data.
Honestly, not really the technology has changed. The approach that I take changed. And it may surprise you and many listeners, because in the earlier days of my work, I used more AI and more machine learning, which you might think is the high-tech approach, actually. And over time, I shifted more towards an approach of using the data science to bring knowledge and understanding to the employees who were really dealing with churn. And that's actually, you know, one of the key lessons that I wanted to bring to people in my book is to don't focus on the AI for churn, because many people will say, oh, an AI can predict churn. And they're right. You know, AI programs can predict churn, but they're not good at telling you what to do about churn. And that's the problem, because every churn is different. Well, it's not true that every churn is different, but there are distinct reasons for churn. And if someone is churning for reason A, you don't want to apply the save tactic for reason B. So you have to be clear on what the reasons for churn are. And most AI and machine learning models are really unsuited to do this.
Carl Gold is the chief data scientist at Zuora, where he created the Subscription Economy Index and the data science behind Zuora's Subscriber Insights. He has a PhD from the California Institute of Technology and has authored publications on machine learning and neuroscience. Before coming to Zuora, he spent most of his post-academic career as a quantitative analyst in Wall Street. Now a data scientist, he uses a variety of tools and techniques to analyze data around online systems. He is the author of the book Fighting Churn with Data, on using data to increase subscriber engagement and reduce churn. Now listen to this super insightful episode with Carl Gold. Carl, welcome to Bits About Books. I'm really, really excited to talk to you because it's rare that a technical book, which is so relevant for the SaaS business, is written in the approachable format that you have. And it's a very important topic as well. So welcome.
Thank you. And also thank you for, I mean, that praise. I'm glad I was able to make the subject approachable.
I know you have been a data scientist all your life. And Zuora is a special place, no doubt. So why this book, basically, why did you think you need to write a book on churn?
Well, I mean, I'll have to tell you a little bit of the background, and I'll tell your listeners some of the background about Zuora, because they might not know this company with a funny name. It's Z-U-O-R-A. No one knows how to pronounce it, and no one knows what we do. But actually, you know, we're the platform behind many subscription services that you do know. I have to, like, check who are the customers I'm allowed to say. I mean, brand names like Zoom and HBO and, you know, many companies, the Financial Times, many companies that you've heard of, Zuora is behind them managing their subscriptions and a lot about, you know, their business. So we have a lot of customers who are subscription companies, and they, of course, churn is a very big issue for them. You know, churn, as you said, churn is, you know, life or death for pretty much all of these recurring services and businesses. honestly, my experience with Churn even starts at another startup before I came to Zora. If you look in the acknowledgments of my book, there's this whole kind of like, I have to thank the people from here and from here. So I started on Churn at the request of a friend back in around 2014, I think. And then I did some, you know, did some Churn analyses there. And then I came to Zora and I worked on Churn for many, many Zora customers. Where we would analyze their data and figure out what were the indicators of churn. And also, I really had to work on how to make that information useful to those companies. So, and over time, I developed this down to really just like a factory production process where a company would give me some customer data. And within a few days, you know, my team would just like, you know, it was like churn jujitsu, you know, we had a system for just getting to the bottom of all these different analyses of churn. So there was just came a point when I was like, wow, you know, we have it down to a system here because we've done it so many times and for so many different companies. It's just seemed worth like sharing the knowledge, you know. And, you know, just to help other subscription companies because it is, you know, such an important topic. Okay, now, to be honest, of course, at the same time, there's, you know, the self-promotion aspect of it. You know, I was like, well, no one's written a book about churn yet. So that means if I write a book on my churn experience, which I had, a considerable amount of, then it would be the first book, you know, devoted to churn. So that's just sounded cool, too. I just felt like I would kick myself if a few years later someone else had written the book that I wanted to write. I'd be like, oh, I should get, you know, my point of view out there. And
that makes sense. So 2014 is when you started working on this methodology, if I may put it very, very broadly.
Yeah.
And
in the early days, it was very different, but yeah.
Yeah. So obviously the tools have changed and your ability to do more precise predictions or finding precise results might have changed because of all the technology that has come between 2014 and today.
Honestly, not really the technology has changed because the approach that I take changed. And it may surprise you and many listeners because in the earlier days of my work, I used more AI and more machine learning, which you might think is the high-tech approach, actually. And over time, I shifted more towards an approach of using the data science to bring knowledge and understanding to the employees who were really dealing with churn. And that's actually, you know, one of the key lessons that I wanted to bring to people in my book is to don't focus on the AI for churn, because many people will say, oh, an AI can predict churn. And they're right, you know, AI programs can predict churn, but they're not good at telling you what to do about churn. And that's the problem, because every churn is different. Well, it's not true that every churn is different, but there are distinct reasons for churn. And if someone is churning for reason A, you don't want to apply the save tactic for reason B. So you have to be clear on what the reasons for churn are. And most AI and machine learning models are really unsuited to do this. So I evolved to an approach of focusing on the customer metrics. And I should make an example just so your listeners know, by a customer metric, I mean it could be something simple like how many documents did the user create in the last month? If the service has something to do with, you know, document creation or editing, or if it's a video service, you would be like, how many videos did they watch in the last month? Or better yet, how many videos did they completely watch, you know, to the end or close to the end? Or how many videos did they thumbs up and like and share with a friend? And all those kind of metrics are actually very powerful predictors of churn. When you look at who's doing them and not doing them. And if you turn it around, they're powerful predictors of retention, which is, you know, just the opposite of churn, is retaining a customer. So I changed my approach away from the AI and machine learning and really just focused on helping companies get good customer metrics that allowed the the frontline churn fighters to do their job. And so a frontline churn fighter, I mean, you're in marketing, you know, these are a lot of people in marketing, you know, people who are writing email campaigns that are going to encourage the users to explore the product or try a new feature. And also the customer success or support representatives are also really the frontline, you know, churn fighters, you know, people who help customers when they have a problem. What all those people need is not a machine learning algorithm that's just going to flag risks. They need to go one level deeper and understand the reason for the risks. Now, some people who like technology would say, oh, you just need an even more high-tech machine learning algorithm that'll explain the reasons. But there's much simpler ways to understand the reasons for churn, and that's just by understanding your customer metrics. If you have a good set of customer metrics and the team understands them, they can predict churn without machine learning. Now, I do teach machine learning and AI too, but it's more like you have to have the foundation first, which is the understanding, the customer metrics, the frontline churn fighters who are going to actually do something like send an email or make a call or, you know, something like that. So there's a real evolution in the book, and that was a lot what I wanted to bring to people.
Great. So when did you decide to write the book, actually?
Let's see. It was in when did I start the process? Probably mid-late 2018.
Okay. Was there a trigger, except the fact that what you already told me, that somebody else may write this book?
The real trigger was just we were doing something like our, you know, 50th churn analysis at Zora. And I was hitting, you know, I was running it through and I was just like, God, I just felt like we have this down to such a system that we can do it so fast. It just seemed like I should share that knowledge, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, there wasn't really a particular trigger. It was just like one day it occurred to me like, God, we have such a system for this and it's a widespread problem. We should share with people the system that we have.
Right.
And Zora was very supportive. You know, they didn't treat it like, oh, this is our proprietary knowledge. We don't want – they were because, you know, Zora wants the success of all subscription companies.
Right.
Because we see, you know, the expression like a rising tide floats all boats.
Yeah.
You know, we want all subscription companies and all subscription platforms to succeed because it just expands our, you know, market. And, you know,
I get
so it. Zora was very supportive, you know, from the start.
Wonderful. So once you decided, what was the next step? How did you structure? I mean, it's a very detailed process.
The next step was really I started reading blog posts about how to get a book contract and, you know, how to write a book proposal because I didn't know anything about writing books. And so anyone who's listening to this and is thinking about writing book, there's really a lot of material out there. On what it's like to write different kinds of books and, you know, how to put together a book proposal. So I pretty much followed the instructions on a few, you know, websites and blog posts on how to put a book proposal together. And then I had to locate publishers who would take unsolicited proposals, which is not that many, actually, if you're aware of that, too. And then I started shopping it around. I wrote a sample chapter, which is, again, it's one of the things that you're going to have to do. It turned out the sample chapter was very different from the what the book turned out to be like.
Okay.
It's funny you mentioned how approachable my book was, and a lot of the credit for that goes to my publisher, because when I started out, I was like thinking that I would write a book for experts, you know, for the, you know, to really teach my fellow data scientists the most detailed, you know, hard topics I could. But then my publisher said, no way, you know, you write a book for beginners. Well, I'm like, why? And they say, because there are more beginners in the world, you know? And they said, you write your book for beginners. And then if you want to go into deep technical subjects, hey, you've got your blog, you've got your website, you know, stuff like that. So I saw the sense of what they were saying. So I adapted a very approachable, you know, tone and level, you know, for the book.
Right. So how much of the book is about the technicalities? Because I know there is a link to your GitHub, your bucket where one can go and look at the sample codes that you referred to. So that will be a challenge for someone like me who doesn't know that kind, obviously, I don't know that kind of tech, to go and actually test it out. So that bit is there. So guys who are into it, they can do that. But how did you decide to balance the concepts that you are talking of and the technology? So basically, they go hand in hand, yet the concepts are approachable, technology may not be, right? So
yeah, I think I actually didn't do that as well as I could have. I mean, the concepts are mixed in there, and I'd say the book is about half concept and half technology.
Right.
But I don't. It's intermixed. You know, I kind of teach a technology, or in some cases, it's like different techniques. Like, you know, in the chapter two, I teach three different ways to calculate the churn rate.
Right.
You know, and then I have a discussion of, oh, there's a section of, oh, which churn rate is right for you, you know?
Right, right.
And things like that. So it's kind of, it is intermixed in the book. And I honestly, you know, I talked about it with my editor at a certain point. Would there be some way that we could group together all the business knowledge separate from the technology? And it just turned out to be too hard just because of the ordering of the concepts.
Right. Right.
I mean, maybe we could have done like half a chapter on technology and then half a chapter on the business knowledge, but then you'd have to paraphrase all the technology lessons. So it's really kind of intermixed, I'm not as happy about that. I wish that I could have maybe, you know, there's another book to write actually, which would be just the business lessons.
Absolutely.
You know, without technology.
So was your book led by the thinking part, not what you finally produced? As you were thinking about the structure of the book, were you thinking technology first, or were you thinking the desired outcome bit first? How did it sort of play out?
Well, I knew the desired outcome is to help companies get the really good metrics on their customers, because that's what they need to reduce churn. And that's where the data science comes in. So I had that goal. And then I basically tried to make it like a step-by-step guide to achieve that goal, assuming someone only knows a very modest amount of programming. So, I mean, we're talking about this like it's a technical book, like it's so advanced, but this is really suitable for someone who's had just one or two courses in programming, or, you know, 1 or 2 years of experiences programming should be able to follow along, at least for the first half of the book, which is the most important half.
Right.
At the end of the book, I get into technical stuff like statistics and machine learning, which you might need more background, but it's really front-loaded to make it approachable. I'm imagining like a small company, they have a few guys in their IT department. The marketing department says, hey, we need to help figure out what's going on with our churn. We need churn indicators.
Right.
Then this would be a book that would allow a team with, you know, only minimal resources to get something done fast. That's the other reason I put all my code on GitHub.
Right.
I want to make it easy for people to get something done, you know, and get something for the tech people to get something in front of their marketing department quick.
Right. Yeah, that's very generous. And I think people who are going to go through the book and they want to apply something, they can bring in their own data set. And I have seen that even if it's a small data set, they can still sort of apply and see the results and then sort of correlate what's going on.
It's time for a short break. Carl makes a point that subscription is not about SaaS. New York Times runs on subscription, so does Spotify and Netflix, and a host of other services. I asked Carl, what are the key reasons that customers are churning? Stay with us.
You are listening to a Business Podcast Network original. Podcasting is the fastest growing content marketing opportunity, which is untapped. We can help you craft your audio strategy and help leverage the wide reach and easy streaming capability that the smartphone penetration provides. It is easy, it is powerful, and personal. Talk to us to find out how podcasting can help you build your brand and reach out to your targets like never before. Write to us at bpn@bizcast.in. That is bpn@bizcast.in. Business Podcast Network. Podcasts end to end.
Welcome back. I'm your host, Shubhanjan Sarkar. Right before the break, I asked Carl,
why are customers churning in SaaS products? Let's listen in.
Tell me, what are the key reasons that you see that people are churning?
The fundamental lesson, and this is also what comes out in the book, is it's all about the customer getting value. The people who churn, it's quite simple. It's almost obvious. They're the ones who don't use the product, right? On any SaaS product, you always have a significant fraction of the population, maybe 10%, maybe 15%, could be more, who aren't even using it. They're signed up and they're not even using it. And guess what? They churn at the highest rate.
Right.
You know, and it doesn't take like a degree in data science to predict that that would be the case. People who aren't using it are going to churn. Now, the more nuanced question is, how much is enough? At what level is the use enough that a typical customer is satisfied? And that's what the techniques in the book help you get to. Exactly how much of what behaviors makes a healthy customer. And then there's a more nuanced level about the monetary value, where when you customers are paying for a service, and particularly when you have customers who pay at different levels, it's simple. It's kind of simple if everyone pays the same, like $9.99 a month for a consumer. Then you really just have to look at the behavior. But when you get into the SaaS world, like Zora and business-to-business products, you have a variety of price points. And then the ratio of the price to the usage is critical. Because you might have people who use it a lot, but they got a bad deal from your sales department, so they're, you know, paying too much. Or you might have people who only use it a little, but they got a good deal. You know, so you actually have to bring in the real value component as well. And so the intuition is very easy. You know, the people who are going to be the churn are going to be the ones who aren't getting a good value. The details and the nuance is, well, how much is enough? You know, how much value does someone need to be getting to be safe or healthy? You know, and even safe customers churn. That's another constant theme in the book, is that even your safest customer might churn, and even your most at-risk customer who doesn't use it at all, they might not churn. You know, they might have forgotten, you know, that they signed up.
So
you always have those.
How do customers actually ascertain value when they're, I mean, typical SaaS products are sub $100 per user, most of them. How do they actually ascertain whether this $30 I'm paying is worth my money, or should I just, you know, step out and look for something else?
Well, this is an area where I don't have proof.
Right.
You know, we're kind of talking about the intersection of the psychology, you know, and the data. I honestly think most customers have this calculation going on in the back of their mind, even if they're not conscious of it. When I think, like, you know, was my Netflix subscription worth it last month? I think, how many shows did I watch? How many shows did my kids watch?
Right.
And if I paid $9.99 for Netflix, I'm probably thinking, my family paid about 50 cents a show on Netflix last month, you know, or something like that. You kind of have this back of your envelope. I think we all kind of do that for things. And when you haven't used something for a few months, you're like, oh my God, I just paid $30 for 3 months and I haven't used that thing. And so we're all rational consumers, and we're all kind of doing that.
Right.
But the key thing here that I would want to convey to your listeners is that, in my experience, the value on a product is a long-term experience. Many people have background in sales conversion, and they're thinking about the exact path to the sale, right?
Right.
I feel like that thinking is misapplied for churn. Because people come in thinking, oh, what was the exact sequence of events before a churn? And that's, I believe, usually mistaken, because churn and retention is the value is built up over time. So if a customer has hardly been using your product over a few months, and then maybe they do have some bad experience at the end, like a bug, it crashes, or, you know, someone in support gives them a bad attitude, I think it's usually wrong to focus on that last bad experience, because the reason they're churning is because months have gone by and they've hardly gotten any value. And so the approach of thinking about it from sales, like a sequence of events, like what was the last action, is actually misguided in churn, because the value that customers experience takes time to develop. And conversely, if you use a product a lot, you know, let's say, again, Netflix, let's say you watch Netflix every day, you know, okay, sometimes Netflix gets a little slow, right?
Yeah. It
doesn't load your home screen or something like that. Well, you're not going to cancel your Netflix because you're watching it every day. You know, yeah. Okay, a little times it's laggy. You'll forgive it, you know. Yeah, but it's the service that you're not using at all. Then when it does something you don't like, you're just like, oh, forget it. But it's not the last action.
Fair enough. So that sort of triggers a different kind of thought. Do you see any common pattern? See, like you said, that if somebody's not using your SaaS for 5 months and then the trigger for leaving could be somebody's attitude or some bug or some crash. But if you focus on that, you'll miss the actual story that he was not really using it. Somebody should have reached out to him 5 months back and figured, why did you stop using the product, right? And that you didn't do. And you sort of have caught it at the fag end when the relationship is dead. So
exactly.
Do you see any common threads when you are analyzing data across various SaaS products? Do you see these are the typical reasons people are A, churning, B, these are the things that you need to do? I mean, you talk of interventions like the product improvement and the engagement campaigns and so on. So,
yeah.
So do you have a prescriptive model? I'll break it up. I'm asking too many questions together. So one is, do you see some common threads in SaaS? That these are the reasons customers are typically churning. So from day one, you can be sort of vigilant about that, right? So you bake it into your product that those things are attended to no matter whether it's happening or not. And B, do you see companies having a way to sort of bake it into the system? Yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, the most important thing is onboarding. Which is getting a new customer up to speed and getting value fast. And you don't need to use a lot of data to know this. I mean, this is very common knowledge in the customer success world that you want to have an onboarding program to educate the new customer. And the best companies actually, you know, really check up on it. And if the customer hasn't made it through the training or hasn't done certain activities within a period of time at the beginning, someone needs to reach out to them. I mean, or it could be, it depends on your volume of customers. You know, if it's a business product, you would want a human to reach out to them. If it's a consumer product, maybe you could send them an email like, hey, you didn't finish your onboard video. Maybe you should, you know, give them some suggestions. And that's in general. It's hard to get very specific because there's such a variety as far as, oh, how long should they complete their onboarding? Well, if it's a consumer product, they'd probably better complete their onboarding or getting up to speed within the first week, you know?
Right.
If it's a technical business product like Zora, for example, it could take a few months, you know, it can take a long time. So it's very hard to say exactly what should someone do. And how long should it take? It's very specific to the service, but there always is the onboarding component.
Okay.
It's the number one way, you know, the number one thing, I think.
Okay. Talk about this, the five concepts that you talk about in the interventions that you can do to reduce churn.
Well, the first category is the fundamental one, which is make a better product. Right?
Yeah.
And there are a lot of ways that companies try to make better products. Now, one of the most common one is surveys and talking to users and collecting that feedback. And what the churn data approach does for you is your churns are like a survey that everyone answers. I mean, the problem with surveys is only the people who love you or hate you really give you the survey. So you get this biased view. But everyone answers the renewal survey.
Yeah.
Are you going to renew this month or not? And the churn data gives you a really great way to get detailed information about what's good in your product and what's not. without running a survey. So number one is always improving your product, you know, using the churn data. Number two, which we mentioned, is marketing and engagement campaigns. Could be through email or whatever other communication channel you might have with your customers. If you have, I don't know, instant messaging or something. Yeah. And the key there, of course, is to make it the information valuable to the customer. And that means making it tailored. You don't just want to tell all customers the same thing. Well, you don't want to tell a customer, oh, use this feature if they're already using it, right? Mm. Because then they're going to know that you're not really paying attention to them. You want to really tell them about something that they didn't know and that's valuable about your product in those campaigns. Mm.
So that brings me to a notion that we think that when you're running a SaaS business, it's pretty much on autopilot and it's a low-touch activity and people will come, they'll put in their card, we'll keep charging them through their life and we'll be a happy company, right? But what is more interestingly coming out is that you need to have a human connection with your customers. And when I say human, I mean actually a human who can reach out and actually do stuff for them.
Yeah, definitely. And it doesn't have to be individual connections, of right. course. You know, if you're a consumer product, you're going to work through mass communication.
Right.
But, that's the thing. You do need someone to write that persuasive email. I mean, that's where marketing comes in.
Right.
You're not going to have a data scientist write an email to your customers, are you? I mean, I'm a smart guy, but don't let me write emails to your customers.
Right. Right. And so which also means that the selling or marketing doesn't end with the sale. If you want to tell, say, SaaS founders that you read my book, what would you expect they will take away from the book?
I hope they would take away the importance of really just bringing value to the users. Mm. I think that is top of mind for most startup founders. I mean, they're really looking for how to bring value to their customers. And if they're not, they won't last for long.
That's true.
But I mean, all the VCs and everyone's, you know, saying that. But from the book, you should take away that it's really not hard to make this objective and data driven. Because a lot of it is like, you know, put your, people can't see me put my finger in the air on a podcast. But, a lot of people just do it based on their gut. But it's really very easy once you have a moderate number of customers to make it objective and data driven.
What according to you is a moderate set of data? How at what level does it start actually working? So if you have like 100 customers, 500 customers, what according to you is a moderate level of data?
In the book, I think I said you should have at least 100 churns before you try to start, you know, analyzing it.
Okay, got it.
And how many customers you'll have at that point will typically be, you know, maybe 10x or, you know, at least, because you have many more active customers than churns.
Right.
But if you haven't had 100 churns yet, then you'll have to stick to surveys and, you know, interviews and things like that.
Got it.
And 100, your analysis is still going to be at a rudimentary level.
Hmm. Got it.
And that can be a challenge, actually, for business-to-business product startups. Hmm. Because many B2B companies, they you know, for a few years, they might not have that many customers.
True.
So it
True.
Is very people think that big data is the challenge. Hmm. Actually, in churn, small data is the challenge. If you have big data, you have a lot of customers, well, you'll need to use some expensive hardware, but it's not that expensive nowadays. You know, just use AWS or Azure or cloud. You'll have no problem with your big data. But if you have small data, because you're a B2B company, SaaS product with not that many customers, it is very challenging. And I go into some of the techniques in the book. So it's still doable, but it's more challenging.
So would you like to elaborate a bit on that?
Well, for a B2B company, the techniques are partly using simpler analysis. Like with many, if you have a lot of churns, you can do a very nuanced sort of, like I mentioned, you want to determine what level is a customer a healthy customer. you know, say in their use of your product per month, you know, maybe, and with a consumer product, you can get a very refined answer. Oh, more than 150 is a healthy customer. And for a B2B product, it might be much less refined. Like, well, we know that less than 50 is not healthy, but we don't really know exactly at what point a customer becomes healthy. Somewhere between 50 and 500, you know. We don't, so you'll have a less refined answer. Right. And you may have to live with that as a B2B company. The, I mean, the other techniques are actually more for advanced statistics people. So if you do have like a statistician, you can use what's called a bootstrap regression that is designed to take advantage or make the most of small data.
So Carl, you're talking about how getting data sets to actually actually test this is very difficult.
Yeah. So, I mean, for the book, it was a challenge because no company will share their churn data. I mean, it's their customer data is one of their prized possessions, and it's very strategic, obviously, not to mention if there are any privacy concerns. I mean, usually the data necessary for this is anonymous. But in any event, for the book, I actually took the approach of making a simulation where it there's a randomly generated data set of customers, which has many of the same behaviors as real customers. So that's in the book. And now there's actually a new project I'm doing with my publisher where the my publisher is going to make their own customer data public. I mean, it's anonymous. Remember, this is all just identified by anonymous IDs. And then it, the data consists of, you know, how many books did they read in this online book reading system that my publisher supports. So we're going to be making – it's going to be coming out later this summer, I think. Okay. They call it a live project, and you'll be able to actually analyze Manning Live Book Service's customer data for a real hands-on data set, which is very cool.
Yeah, excellent. I think people who are trying to dig deeper, this will be a great opportunity.
Bits About Books is brought to you by PitchLink, the buyer-seller engagement platform. PitchLink makes buying easy by enabling high-quality engagement between buyers and sellers through its presentation and discussion modules. Sellers create customized sales narratives using sales collaterals and personal videos, and reach out to prospects through a non-intrusive, buyer-qualified engagement. PitchLink requires no installation or download and holds the entire repository of sales collaterals and buyer-seller conversations. Talk to us to know more about how you can engage with customers without intrusion. Call us on 99021-631-32.
There is work to be done if your customers are churning, and a good place would be to read this book. And I will, and I will possibly come back to you for a follow-up, which could be a slightly different chat.
Oh, I'd love to. Yeah.
Thank you so much. I really enjoyed speaking with you, and thanks for your time. And I really believe that this is a very important book. And anybody who is in the subscription business or any business for that matter, I'm sure there are lessons which can be extrapolated to the real world. It is not only about digital. Churn is happening all the time. And we somehow believe that we can ignore that and continue to acquire new customers. But I think the focus that your book brings onto churn is timely and super important.
Thank you.
Coming up in the next episode is a fascinating conversation with Juan David Campolargo and his book Generation Optimism, offering an unique perspective. I'm super excited about this chat, not only because Juan is the youngest author in my show till date, but he's dispelling the myth that millennials are a self-focused, entitled generation.
Last year, I realized that my generation, which is Gen Z, is one of the most pessimistic generations in the history of humankind. And that's not something I'm saying out of nowhere. There's research and surveys that I'll be happy to send you. So I realized that, and that is crazy to me, because we are literally living in the best time ever in the history of humankind. So why this book? Why optimism? So I'm a person who was actually very optimistic despite some difficulties that I had early on my life. And however, I continue to be optimistic, and I see optimism as a way to change the world. When I was very young, my dad was murdered, and he was killed. And the other thing that after that we have to move to the U.S. and that was super hard. So I was born in Venezuela, and so we have to move to the U.S. and it was super hard too. I moved to the U.S. in 2016, and I didn't know any English, nothing. If you would have said to me hello or something, I would not have understood a single word of it. So I decided to start writing this book in 2019. So that was only about 2 or 3 years after I moved here. So by the time, my English was pretty good. So the book is pretty much composed by my story, interviews, and research. There's a lot of research and data.
We have a fantastic lineup over the next couple of episodes with great conversations with Melanie Daziel on her book Content Fuel Framework and Fred Kopstek on his book Selling Through Partnering Skills and many more.
Thank you for being with us today on Bits About Books, where we talk to authors about breakthrough books on sales, marketing, and business. We hope this conversation helped inform and motivate as we all navigate a rapidly changing business environment. For us, these are enlightening conversations enriched with knowledge and expertise. We encourage you to go out and buy the book to learn firsthand and implement some of the great ideas we discussed today. We hope to have you with us again in the next exciting episode of Bits About Books. If you liked what you heard, subscribe to the show in your favorite podcast platforms like iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, or wherever else you get your podcast from, and give us a rating while you are at it.
This BizCast original podcast is produced for PitchLink, the next generation buyer-seller engagement platform, where the mission is to make buying easy. Hosted by Subhanjan Sarkar and produced by Rajiv Aditya. See you next time and have a wonderful day.